Mr. Briggs?
Thank you. Agenda item number five is also a mandatory minimum penalty regarding the city of Pismo Beach, and we also have an opening statement for you to read, please.
This is the time and place for a hearing by the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board for consideration of proposed mandatory minimum penalties against the city of Pismo Beach in San Luis Obispo County. The order of presentation at this hearing will be as follows. 1. Witnesses called by the board staff. 2. Cross-examination of regional board staff witnesses by the discharger. 3. Witnesses called by the discharger. 4. Cross-examination of discharger's witnesses by regional board staff. 5. Representatives of agencies. 6. Other interested persons. 7. Summation or closing statements by the discharger and regional board staff. Board members and staff counsel may ask questions to clarify testimony of a witness at any time. Each person who testifies at this hearing shall begin by stating his or her name and address, unless the address has already been given. All persons who may testify at this hearing, please stand. Even if you don't plan to testify but are involved in this matter, raise your right hand and take the following oath. Do you solemnly swear that the testimony which you will give in this matter is the truth?
I do.
Thank you. Mr. Briggs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This item has come around the horn a couple of times as detailed in our staff report, and we look forward to resolving it today. And giving the staff report is sorrel marks of our staff.
Good afternoon, Chair Young, members of the board. As Roger indicated, this is revisiting an issue that you've considered several times in the past. And primarily, it's the review or revision of an enforcement order that your board adopted in May 2004 for 245 effluent violations from the city of Pismo Beach. The order was for a mandatory penalty of $735,000. Now, errors were discovered in the method of calculating and reporting the violations, but they weren't discovered until after the order was already adopted. So the appropriate way to resolve those was that the city petitioned the order to the state board, and our executive officer and the city of Pismo Beach entered into a stipulation to that there were errors in the violations covered in the 2004 order. So the state board adopted its own order, remanding the issue back to your board for reconsideration. So that's where we are today. The revised complaint was issued by the executive officer in January, and it corrected the errors for the 2004 a penalty order, but it also covered an extended period because the 2004 order covered from July of 2001 to July of 2003. So we brought this up to November of 2004, covering the violations that have occurred through that period. The complaint covered a total of 118 violations and has associated penalties of $351,000. The sources of the violations are mainly related to the treatment plant's poor condition, and it is nearing capacity and has had problems associated with operator error, with storm impacts. They have had some equipment failures, and the community has quite a large fluctuating flow due to tourism on weekends and holidays, which also impact their treatment capabilities, and they have in the past had some filamentous bacteria problems that have interfered with proper treatment. Some of the violations may not have been actual discharge violations, but were a result of improper sampling. However, the upside of this is the treatment plant is currently under a comprehensive upgrade that is proceeding on schedule. The The city has submitted a comment letter on the complaint. It's included in your agenda package, and we have had several meetings with city staff, primarily to discuss BOD monitoring issues. Several of the violations covered by this penalty order are not BOD violations, but the vast majority are related to BOD. And the city relatively recently realized that it was monitoring, it was sampling for BOD in the wrong location. It was sampling upstream of its chlorination process, and that if it sampled downstream of its chlorination process, which is the appropriate location, there were lower BOD concentrations, and so the city proceeded with an in-house investigation, sampling both upstream and downstream of chlorination, and concluded from that investigation that there was between 40 and 88% reduction of BOD through the chlorination process. In reviewing this issue myself, it appears that literature does support that there is some BOD reduction. That's actually used as a treatment process for certain types of industrial waste. But from the standpoint of municipal waste, the literature supports that 2 pounds of chlorine could reduce 1 pound of BOD through the process. So using that basic assumption and also assuming the most beneficial conditions, that all of the chlorine applied was actually used to reduce BOD, I went through the process of calculating what was the best-case scenario of BOD concentrations in the effluent. And those calculations indicate that somewhere between 5 and 55% reduction of BOD could have occurred through the chlorination process. So just to review the variable conclusions, the city concluded that a minimum of 40% reduction of BOD occurred through the chlorination process. This would have reduced the violations covered by this order by 47, and so that the order would have a total of 71 violations that did occur. Now, based on literature and my calculations, it certainly supports that some reduction of BOD occurs through the chlorination process, that under the best case scenario, 35 of the reported BOD violations may not have been actually discharge violations because of that reduction, and that would leave 83 that were violations. So based on those different conclusions, there's actually three different scenarios that I would like you to consider. If you accept that the BOD violations that the city originally reported actually occurred, then the action associated with that would be to adopt the order for the entire 118 violations for a penalty of $351,000. And that order is in your staff report as attachment one. If you accept the city's contention that there was a minimum of a 40% reduction in BOD, then 71 of the violations actually would have been discharge violations, so it will be appropriate to adopt an order for those 71 violations, and that would come to $210,000. And that would be in your staff report, attachment one, but including the shaded language. If you accept that the best case scenario, the theoretical BOD reduction did occur, then the appropriate order in your staff report is attachment 1A, and that's for the 83 violations subject to a penalty of $243,000. Now, in any of those events, a significant supplemental environmental project is feasible and has been proposed by the city. Now, it may be just a little bit confusing the way I have it listed here, and I had originally listed these as the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, consistent with the 2004 order, because these should look familiar. They're very similar to the components of the supplemental environmental project that was adopted in the 2004 order. There's the reclamation feasibility study, the agricultural water quality short courses, tracking of the bacteria that's rampant here, development of the watershed management plan, and then implementation of some of the priority projects identified in that plan. But the way this will be implemented is all five of those issues would be really components of number four, the water quality management plan. Now, items 2, 4, and 5, it's staff's judgment that those are priority projects from the standpoint of what projects would actually result in the best potential water quality improvement. The SCP will be implemented through a partnership between the city and Central Coast Salmon Enhancement. They are an established group working within the watershed, and they are pretty well networked already in the Pismo Creek watershed. They have a successful history of implementing some similar projects, and there would be some leveraged effort with landowner participation and volunteer monitoring, those sorts of things. Now, this particular SCP is consistent with the regional priorities that are identified in our Watershed Management Initiative chapter, as well as the Nonpoint Source Program, and also the vision discussion that's included in your agenda for tomorrow. I hope that's not me. As with the different scenarios discussed earlier, on which order you may be considering, if the order adopted for the 118 violations were adopted, then the supplemental environmental project available fund would be $183,000, and that could fund all five elements. However, the other two potential orders for either 71 violations or 83 violations would have a lesser amount available for supplemental environmental project, but it would be able to fund those highest priority projects, the water quality short courses, the management plan, and some amount of implementation. And the higher amount available with the order covering 83 violations would go to additional implementation of priority projects that were identified in the watershed management plan. So as discussed in the staff report, at this point we're recommending approval of the penalty order for the 83 violations, which would be for an amount of $243,000. $129,000 of that will be available for the SCP, and we're specified that should be directed to the water quality short courses, the watershed management plan, and implementation of the watershed management plan. Now, there is a minor correction to finding number 16 of any of those three orders, and it's just changing December 31st to November 30th. And then also, similar to the San Simeon order, we would like to add a finding based on the amount of staff time that has been devoted to this particular project. And since it has been before your board on several different occasions and actually prepared for the agenda and pulled off the agenda, the staff costs have been considerable, in the neighborhood of $36,000. I'd be happy to answer any questions, and I know the city is available here to answer questions, as is Central Coast Salmon Enhancement Representative.
Mr. Shallcross.
Yeah, well, just one point of clarification. For option three, the 35 violations, what percentage of does that represent of lowering of the BOD? You put the others in a percentage, but you didn't put...
Well, that reduction of violations was based on the calculation for each day or each week violation. So it's not an exact percentage for each one. The percentages ranged from 5% to 55%.
Okay, well then I'm confused because the city's calculations, you had the percentage of 40%. So the 40% and the 47 BLD violations aren't related?
Yes. Now, the city's study indicated that between 40% and 88% reduction occurred under different conditions.
Right.
And as a result, 47 of the violations did not occur. But it's not a specific reduction that across the board applies to everyone.
Okay, thanks. That clears it up. Thanks.
Dr. Press.
So I'm thinking about the implementation of the watershed management plan. And I saw that phase two of page four of the set proposal provides a project summary and then some action items, bank stabilization, repair management, so on. Your proposal of option three proposes more implementation here. Could you give me a sense, could you give us a sense of how much of this would be done, how much of that money would be available for this work? Between the agricultural courses, the watershed management plan development, you could eat up a lot of that SEP money, and then what really would we have left over for actual water quality improvements, so-called in-the-water improvements, as opposed to training and study? I was initially a little sad to see the peer tracking study, bacteria tracking, go away, because I'm continually thinking about SEPs that are physical interventions in addition to or as opposed to training and study. So here I'm trying to gauge that. Yeah.
Right. Well, first let me just mention that the description that's in the staff report is very general.
Yeah.
And we will be working with the city, Central Coast Salmon Enhancement, and our staff to develop a very specific scope of work, and of course the city will want a very specific contract with Central Coast Salmon Enhancement to identify the deliverables and those sorts of issues. But only $10,000 of this SEP is earmarked for the water quality short courses.
$10,000.
Uh-huh. Yes, that was a specific called out amount. Now, the exact amount that will be necessary to complete the watershed management plan isn't specified. So the remainder that will be available for implementation of the priority projects in that plan also is not specified because it's whatever's left. However, since there already has been a certain amount of work already done within the watershed, as I mentioned, Central Coast Salmon Enhancement has been working in that watershed. They are well-connected, networked there. We're expecting that the watershed management plan that we would normally expect to cost in the neighborhood of $100,000 would be somewhat less than that.
And the total, again, for option three provided?
$129,000.
All right. So if there's $10,000 for the short course and $100,000 for the management plan, there's not much left over.
Right. Uh-huh. Right. There is not much left over. But we're hoping that the management plan would be something less than $100,000 because of the preliminary work that's already been done there.
Would you feel comfortable with stipulating that the plan not exceed a certain sum? For example, $75,000. Would you, as who has worked on this, would you feel comfortable delimiting a scope of work that could be also cost delimited?
I think that would be actually a good plan.
Yeah.
A good idea to limit it in that way, because the watershed management plans can be somewhat brief and general, or can be exceptionally detailed.
Yeah.
So
exceptionally is a good term. So I would like to see that. I mean, I don't want to deliberate yet, but I mean, I think that we should come back to that point afterwards. Thank you.
Mr. Daniels.
Could I just clarify a
of
few
course.
Things first? One is that out of these five different elements of the plan, even if the board imposes option one with the maximum amount of the penalty, you don't have to take all five or nothing. The board still has the discretion to approve some of the projects and not others. And if the board wanted to make it a condition of approving the SEP that X amount actually has to be spent on implementation, then that's perfectly within the enforcement policy. But I also wanted to point out, too, that I don't want the board to put the cart before the horse, and the decision on what SEPs the board wants shouldn't be driving the decision on how many violations there were. These are mandatory minimum penalties, so the board needs to make a factual determination whether or not these violations occurred and whether or not there's substantial evidence that they occurred. And if there is, the board has to impose the penalties. There is case law saying that a discharger who reports violations in their monitoring report that they're legally required to submit is bound by that report. Those are admissions that the violations occurred. That's an admission that's, you know, the board can still consider that, consider that there's other evidence in determining whether these violations occurred or not, and Sorrell has discussed what that evidence is. I think that there was one more thing, and if I remember it, I'll come back.
If I could throw in one other thing,
sure.
Speaking of the evidence, I don't think you mentioned the literature citation. Wasn't that Metcalf and Eddy, Water and Wastewater Engineering?
Yes, it is.
Okay, thanks.
And no, I didn't mention it. Sorry about that.
Sorry.
And I did remember the other thing I was going to say. The monitor and reporting plan, Sorrell can give you the exact language, requires that samples be taken at representative locations. And so if these weren't taken at representative locations, those are discretionary violations of the permit that aren't alleged in this complaint, but they could be.
Okay. Any other questions of staff? Mr. Daniels?
Actually, your final point is the thing I wanted to pursue, that I'm leery with this notion of taking numbers and kind of trying to guess what the real numbers could have been. And if we accept the fact that these numbers that were taken weren't real numbers, then these were incomplete reports that got sent to us, and that would be a violation. So how many in this, I think it's probably a two-year time frame from July 1, 2001 to July 31, 2003 was the range in which these particular violations happened that, quote, the BOD was not being measured. So how many reports would that be then? How many incomplete reports would that consist of?
Well, they report monthly, so.
So that would be 25 months worth of missing incomplete reports at 3,000 per.
Yes, although actually this procedure went on until.
Yeah, it may have gone on before that.
Mid-2004.
And it may have gone on earlier as well.
Right, but for the area covered in this,
right.
the time frame covered in this order mm-hmm. would be from July 2001 to, I believe, around May of 2004.
But even this little range that I was talking, which was the original complaint, that would be 25 months, and that would be $75,000
correct.
For incomplete reports, just for that. All right, thank you. That's indeed more than.
Okay. Anything else by staff at this time?
Nope.
Okay. And we have a speaker. Well, let's see. We have more than one speaker. Of course, we've got the discharger, Dennis Delzite, city engineer, and then Greg Ray.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
The City of Pismo Beach is in agreement with the staff's recommendation. We have no further testimony at this time, but want to thank the board and the staff for their consideration in this very long and complicated issue. We'll be here if you have any questions.
Okay. Any questions? Mr. Daniels?
I wanted to question there's a kind of anomaly here that the data above 30 is being treated differently than the data below 30. And I wanted to understand the justification for that.
30 is our discharge requirement. We have a discharge, we have three. We have 90, 45, and 30. Mm-hmm. Correct me if I'm wrong. 30 is the monthly average. 45 is the, which average?
Zero. So
weekly. And 90 is the maximum.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's per our discharge requirements.
But you're claiming that there's a almost different behavior going on above 30 and below 30.
Well, I should explain how the city approached this. When we first discovered where the samples were being taken, we said, well, we're actually chagrined that we found out that they were taken there. But we knew immediately it would make a difference. So we decided that we would take a scientific approach to this. And for a long period of time, approximately 6 months, we took samples simultaneously before chlorination and after chlorination so that we could gather enough data so that we could prepare curves and see what the correlation was. And so the city's approach was to use actual data, test data, based upon our wastewater. And we submitted this to the Water Quality Control Board staff. They looked at it and said, okay. They took they cross-checked it through literature. And in their cross-check, they came to the same conclusion that we did, although it wasn't exactly identical. We were in agreement in terms of identifying that there's a considerable reduction in BOD before chlorination and after chlorination. So,
I wanted to pursue that because for me, I'm not swayed yet. For example, on your data pages for August of 2004, there are, in fact, it's August 20th and August 23rd. There are two values listed for 28, and 28 is about 7% lower than 30. So if the 30, anything equal to or greater than 30 is a 40% reduction, you'd expect a pretty sizable reduction for 7% less. Instead, we get a reduction of 4% and 7%. In other words, almost no reduction.
I see Greg Ray is an associate civil engineer on our staff, mm-hmm. who actually spent a lot of detailed time on this, and he's available here and appears to have an answer to that question.
Okay, I would like an answer.
Hi, I'm Greg Ray. My address, was it my job address there? That I live at 909 Sandalwood in Rio Grande, if that's appropriate. At any rate,
don't worry, we won't come visit you.
hopefully no water quality violations there. The anomaly you point to, I might address that in two ways. First of all, one of the things we wanted to do is concentrate on the data that were actually violations. So we looked at, it was simple for us to just draw a line at 30. 30, if all of our BOD reported values are 30 and below, then we'd have no violations. And regardless of the effect of the sampling point, it would sort of, the argument would be moot. So we looked at 30 and above. However, I noticed the same anomaly that you did. As we got close to 30 and then from 30 down, we started seeing varying results. In fact, for some really low values of BOD,
they were negative.
We actually saw a couple of increases.
Yes.
And I thought, well, you know, it's not consistent with the chemistry and the biology associated with this particular issue. I mean, you take an organic compound and you apply an oxidizing compound such as chlorine to it, and you would expect the organic compounds to be oxidized. Certainly. Any wastewater expert that you would talk to, and I must admit I'm not a wastewater expert, but any that you would talk to, and any, and I talked to numerous, a number of them, all said, "Oh, yeah, you're going to see a BOD reduction as a result of disinfection." I said, "Okay, so what happens here? How come we saw some increases?" And they all pointed me back to the lab, specifically to the lab and to the test. And in fact, in the staff report you have in front of you, I think you'll notice in a part of that staff report where the lab describes their QAQ, quality assurance quality control procedures, they make a lot of reference to how critical the testing procedure, the nature of the testing procedure, the sampling itself, the temperature, the every little detail of the procedure is to the results that they obtain. What I did then is I went ahead and called our lab that we've been using to provide the sampling, Creek Labs, and I talked to the owner there. And he explained to me that as the BOD values get lower and lower and lower, the effect of the test itself comes into play. He said you would expect to take three or four different samples from the exact same location, exact same day, and find that all of them would likely have different results as you get lower and lower and lower in BOD values. Just the test itself becomes a factor. So we wanted to sort of get above a value also that would get us away from the test being an anomaly and rely more on what we thought was probably more factual and real data. And again, the number 30 just seemed to be a logical cutoff for two reasons now. So.
Well, it's certainly a logical reason since that's where the data seems to be have a positive, a large positive drop down.
Yeah, we plotted all the data. We did this for 6 months. We plotted the data on some graphs, and you know, we found as the BOD values get higher, what we found is that the decrease in BOD due to disinfection seems to increase, and it seems to level off in the range of about 40 or so. So you know, again, it's
the thing that troubles me is. If the values at 28 are, according to you, wrong, that you know that you have all these big sampling problems at 28, then I have nothing to say that the values at 30 and 32 and 34 don't also have large sampling errors with them.
Sure.
I don't see the effect of why suddenly between 28 and 30, which is a very short distance, suddenly everything becomes okay and below it everything is terrible.
Right, I think that leads.
So I begin to wonder, you know, are all these data suspect, and we're just sitting here playing with numbers and trying to guess a value for you know what the weather is going to be tomorrow.
Certainly, and we've acknowledged that in our correspondence back to the regional board staff. You know, we didn't go into, you know, you take something as variable as a wastewater effluent and you try to characterize exactly what's going to happen on any one given day. And I think it's so variable that you can't do that. We tried to take the most conservative approach as we could. We saw huge reductions. We saw reductions in the 80 to 90% range, too.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought, well, you know, we've got variability in the results. Let's look at the minimum reduction that we saw in this range that we're looking at, which was the 40%. But I think that what you're pointing out lends a lot of support to the other direction that that regional board staff took in considering this, and that is going back to design literature. It's sort of a rule of thumb average for wastewater in general, in design books of Metcalf and Eddy, for example. That suggests that you would see a pound of BOD reduction per 2 pounds of chlorine applied. And so that is the approach that the staff here took. And I think that addresses sort of the point that you're bringing out to some extent. We don't know why there's anomalies. Our study was scientific to the extent that we showed that there's definitely BOD reduction taking place.
Yeah, but if you have 6 months of data, if you had plotted the variance on the greater than 30 versus the variance on the less than 30, you would be able to corroborate your lab's point about higher error at the low ranges, right?
Yeah, actually, we did that in-house.
So what was the difference in variance?
I don't recall the numbers, but was it significant.
Significant?
Yeah.
Significantly less variance at the high end?
Yes.
Okay. Would have been nice to have those data, the variance estimates, because that would improve my confidence, increase my confidence considerably if I knew that we were getting into measurement problems rather than something magical happening below 30.
I mean, I was looking for the same. You talked about wanting to do statistics on the numbers, and I kept looking for the statistics, but they weren't there. So exactly this kind of issue of the variance and the R-squared for the fit would give me a lot more confidence.
Right.
One more question, which I wanted to also put forward, just to similarly, and it's a sentence on the bottom end of the BOD comparison study methodology, where you talk about the fact that staff further determined that as pre-disinfection BOD values increased, there was a similar increase in BOD percent reduction. And actually, I found some of the data don't indicate that at all. So, for example, on this next page, as I flip it over, in November of 2004, there's a value at 30, and there's a value at 49. The 30 has a 60% reduction, and you go up to 49, it's only a 47% reduction. So even this linear behavior that you're saying is there, I mean, that's a fairly wide variance, and it's the wrong direction, not the direction you're suggesting.
I agree. I think that also, again, points to sort of a different approach that the regional board staff took as perhaps being more appropriate. Our study was scientific to the extent that we showed that we took 6 months worth of data. We analyzed it. We threw out some flyers in the data, in analyzing that, and tried to gain a better understanding of what type of BOD reduction was taking place as a result of disinfection. What we found out and what we can say for certainty is that there is a significant BOD reduction as a result of disinfection. The question I actually put forth in my own report back to your staff here was that the question is how much. We've proved, I believe, conclusively, and I think all the literature supports that disinfection reduces BOD. I mean, that is in fact what it does. The disinfection oxidizes organic compounds. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Why don't we go to our next speaker? Stephanie Wall, did you want to speak? I noticed you checked off if the board wishes. And you're with the Central Coast Salmon Enhancement Project. Does anyone have questions for Ms. Wall? Okay, thank you. Gordon Hensley.
Maybe there's a way we could do all of my comments at once. Chairman Young, Honorable Board, Gordon Hensley, Environment in the Public Interest, the San Luis Obispo Coast Keeper. You've already touched on the incomplete and inaccurate report issues as a violation, and I don't think I want to spend much more time on that other than to just point out that the data must speak for itself. Your staff has to be able to rely on the reports that are given to them. It's the city's responsibility to make sure that those reports are accurate beforehand, rather than coming in after staff has pointed out a violation and say, "Oh no, wait! All of those are not violations." In this particular case, we know that the city of Pismo Beach, with this with their wastewater plant, this is a recalcitrant violator. This has gone on for a long time. The toxics are involved, continuous ocean contamination of a tourist beach, on and on. The violations are chronic and serious, and I would just ask you to consider the consistency of your board in the bigger picture once again. And I just want to ask that are these the actions that you're considering today, Is that consistent with what you've ordered in Los Osos and the more serious actions that you may be faced to deal with in the future? And what kind of precedent are you going to be setting if you head down a pathway today that may pop up again in argument at that point in the future? And I just wanted to put that in sort of the big picture context. I would support staff's recommendation as sort of a second option. I think I'm hearing from the board sort of the same direction that I'm feeling, and I would urge you to adopt staff scenario one and consider returning to your original penalty scenario, the higher penalties, closer to what you originally had. And I guess it's not surprising that I'm asking you to extract more money from them. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Briggs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure you want to compare the city of Pismo Beach with Los Osos. Not only have they had a treatment plant, but they also were able to make a decision to replace their treatment plant with a new facility, which is well underway and scheduled for completion at the end of the calendar year or fall. But you didn't need to testify.
The plant startup is scheduled for October, this coming
October.
Yes.
Fall. Thank you. And that was with consideration of cost overruns that the city of Pismo Beach also, in terms of higher construction bids than were originally anticipated, and yet the city still proceeded and has that plant well underway in terms of being under construction. Also, again, a stark difference with Los Osos. I'm not sure what the total is, but this is, I think, our third mandatory minimum penalty against the city of Pismo Beach, and we're probably in the $500,000 area in terms of totals. So I'm not sure what the point is about comparisons with Los Osos. But to say that we're being somehow lenient with this, the actions that we've taken with Pismo Beach and that we're recommending today is far from the truth. So the board does have discretion. This is an unusual case from the standpoint of trying to make this determination of the what does the evidence support. I mean, normally we get our monitoring reports and we accept the data at face value without having to go through this kind of second guessing and doing a study to try to back calculate what was really a violation and what was not a violation. So this is very unusual from that standpoint, and it's it causes some difficulty in terms of how to address this and what makes the most sense. We lost our vice chair, I'm afraid.
We're never down.
I just did an electrical job.
No extra charge?
Nope.
So it is an unusual situation. If it strikes the board members as, you know, if you wonder why are we going through this, we haven't done this before. And like I say, we kind of struggled with it. I think it made sense to go back and say, okay, what makes sense from the standpoint of applying a bit of science to it as far as what does the literature say is potentially a reduction. And frankly, the recommendation really does give the city the benefit of the doubt if you take the literature value and with the idea that that is the maximum theoretical oxidation that could occur, and then we've applied that, we've basically taken the literature value and given the city the maximum benefit of the doubt as far as the option three that is the staff recommendation. So just so you're aware of how that kind of shakes out in the order of things. But I think we also have to consider the overall history that we have with the city, and to call them a recalcitrant discharger I don't think is fair from the standpoint that they are proceeding with a treatment plant project. It was a project that was more expensive than they anticipated, and yet they did go ahead and authorize construction. They're well underway, and we have already penalized them. I think they've been trying to do everything they can to minimize the violations in the meantime. If they were not trying to minimize violations. In the meantime, we would not be looking at a minimum penalty. We would be going with something above the minimum. So I still think this is a reasonable way to go, but certainly within the board's discretion in terms of where you think the weight of evidence falls in terms of deciding the violations. And I would remind you, as our counsel, Lori Okun, did, that that is the first question. What does the weight of evidence indicate in terms of determining the violations? And then the secondary question after you do that is, are you in agreement with the recommendation as far as the supplemental environmental projects? The supplemental environmental projects are not a driver in terms of determining what the evidence indicates as far as violations.
Okay, board discussion. Mr. Daniels. Mr. Press. You know what confuses me when I look at the two of you?
That's right.
And you know what, and I
yeah,
just figured it out.
My first name, his last
yeah.
name.
Yeah. And that's why every time I'm not.
Daniel Press.
Right. Well, we have Jeffries and Jeffrey.
Yeah. Yeah.
Too.
They don't get me confused.
No.
You could just call, you could just call us Sam and
okay,
Dave.
Dr. Press.
Let's call Oprah.
Okay. You know, I could be persuaded of option three if this is something that the staff feels strongly that about. If the board were to go with option three, I would like to see the data submitted, the raw data submitted, and as well as basically correlations. And variance estimates. I mean, I can do those myself, but you should do them, and you should give them to the staff. And I would want that to be a requirement that be reported. And I understand that's a post hoc kind of thing to do. But as Roger pointed out, this is a new issue for us, and I think that. If you talk about precedent setting, one precedent to set here is to learn from the issue, to learn from the data that we have. We have great data, or we have very useful data. Let's use them. So I'd want to see that. As far as the SEPs are concerned, I would cut out the agricultural short courses, and I would direct the discharger to dedicate no more than 50% of the SEP money to the plan and the rest towards implementation, because I feel like it's important to do environmental quality improvements. We have a lot of planning. We have a lot of workshops in the region. Let's do some water quality improvements.
Okay, any other board comments, questions? Bruce.
Daniels. I have difficulty going with this, you know, let's guess a number kind of a thing here. So, and in particular, since if there is, it's a problem here, if there's a fault here, if there's, you know, a discrepancy here, it's their fault for having done it wrong. And in fact, as I mentioned, you know, if we want to be complete here, then we have to sit around and find them the 25 months of incomplete reports to make that thing. So I really can't go with option three. I think option one is really the right way to treat this.
Mr. Shellcross?
Yeah. I'm a little concerned about their operations, to tell you the truth. They after the first order, they found out they were using some wrong calculations, and then they later found out that they were testing in the wrong place. And I'm just wondering if they have any plans to make sure that their operational side is sort of going to be up to snuff. And that's just rhetorical. You don't have to answer that. Secondly, on the SEPs, I tend to agree with Dr. Press. On the management plan, I like the management plan and the implementation best. I think it'd be good if we could, and I don't know if we could do this somehow, hold even more money for the implementation and let them scramble for money to come up with a plan, because the way you have it set up here, all this money is going into the plan and there's no money for implementation. If we had an amount of money, a big pot of money for implementation, and they didn't come up with a plan, then that money would go away. So really, they would have that impetus to actually come up with a plan and maybe scramble for some money for that plan. So I'm in favor of holding back as much as is reasonable and maybe even a little more for implementation and let them come up with the money for the plan. And then if they don't come up with a plan in 5 years or whatever it is, then the money goes to the state. But that's sort of my thinking on that.
Dr. Bowker, any thoughts, comments?
I think, first of all, option three is a reasonable compromise. I like, given hindsight, how it was worked out. I'm still interested in discussing the implementation plan and how much of these monies go to where, because I think that's an important issue. So perhaps would it be advisable to pass on the options first and then go into how those monies would be spent or allocated?
Lori, can we decide first on the penalty phase, so to speak, and then get into any concerns we have with respect to how the penalties would be allocated?
Yeah, I don't see why not. As long as the second motion is clear what you're approving and not approving.
Okay. All right. Fine. We'll do that. You know, my own thoughts are that I'm okay with option three. I can understand that, these are their reports and they, put the data in there and they should be held responsible for it. And on the other hand, I feel that they made a mistake, and we can more clearly estimate what the penalties or the violations would have been. They're moving towards where we want them to be anyway. Within a few months, they're well on their way, and I think they're making a pretty fair effort to get there. And my own sense is just to be, a little more, I guess, forgiving with the amount of penalties we assess. And so I think staff's proposal to me does seem reasonable and all right. So, okay. Why don't we then, should we break it up? Is there, Dr. Press.
Well, unless there's other... if you want a motion, I'll move to adopt option three, the order that is up here on the screen, and then in a subsequent motion we can talk about the SEP.
Okay.
I would second that.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Okay. Both Mr. Jeffries and Mr. Daniels vote no. All right. One, two,
and I'd like
four. Yes.
Are you ready for a second motion?
Sure.
I would move that. Well, let's see. Let's following on Mr. Shalcross's recommendation, I would move that $100,000 of the SEP be dedicated to implementation. The remainder dedicated to planning. And I'm assuming, but let's ask this to be clear, that board staff would be approving a plan before implementation phase would go into effect, or is that not right?
That's correct. Not only would we be approving a plan, but we would be approving the scope of work to develop the plan.
Right.
And if I can just squeeze it in here, I just want to emphasize that you really need the plan in order to identify what are the priority projects, where to put the money for implementation.
No, I understand, but I think I was persuaded by Mr. Shawcross's point that if you know that there's $100,000 on the other end, if you know that you have a scope of work that that is fairly detailed and clear, you will take $29,000 and you will leverage it to raise the money that you need to produce a proper plan. So that's how I would proceed with it. So did that make an order? Does that make a motion?
Can I just rephrase the motion?
Sure.
Which would be to adopt staff's proposed order 1A or attachment 1A with the change, in addition to the ones we've talked about before, that in paragraph 1, where it says the city of Pismo Beach shall expend $129,000 to implement and complete the SEP described in part 2, 4, and 5 and finding 19 above. Which one of those was the short courses? So we're taking that out. And add a sentence after that stating that no more than $29,000 shall be expended for the planning phase for 4.
That sounds good to me.
And I think
Yes.
I think we need something in there to indicate what happens to the $100,000 if the plan or the implementation doesn't happen within a certain amount of time. I mean, if they decide to just blow it off.
I would expect that would be true of any SEP projects, is that if they don't do it.
If it's automatic.
I don't know if it is, but I think that should be just generally true for anything.
It's actually not automatic, but it's already in the order. It says that if any milestone is not completed to the satisfaction of the executive officer by its due date according to the approved schedule and budget, the suspended liability shall be immediately due and payable to the state board. So the schedule would say all the planning or all the projects need to be implemented by 5 years from today.
Also down in finding 6.
Okay, and paragraph 6 as well.
Right. And just to clarify for me, that $100,000 is put into an account, right? It's not something they can come up with later.
No, it needs to go into a dedicated account within 30 days.
Okay,
and they've already set that up.
Okay, so to Mr. Daniels.
Well, continuing on the tradition of discussing before we do the second, I want to ask staff, is the 129 more than is needed for these two projects, or is that feasibly expendable?
Certainly, it is all feasibly expendable.
Okay.
What I'm a little bit concerned about is the I'm expecting that when the plan is done, there will be a huge number of projects identified, and that whatever money is available, whether it's $100,000 or some later additions to that, could be spent in very productive ways within the watershed, you know, based on that plan, based on the priorities that are identified there. I'm a little concerned about
the quality
getting the plan done, or getting enough of it done to appropriately spend it.
Can we actually get a reasonable plan for 29 plus whatever the city? Now, that's the other thing I think we need to ask here is, you know, if we give the city 29,000, are they willing or able to put in the extra money to do a real plan or not?
No. And I'm getting some indications that the city may want to address that
okay.
specific comment.
Because I'd like to know.
I think the only comment that I would have on behalf of the city, you know, in terms of proposing the SEP, I think our goal here is to hopefully see something good come out of this, something good for the environment. You know, clearly the money's out of our hands once the violation order is written. I'm concerned. We did have some fairly long discussions with Salmon Enhancement Group about the cost of preparing the watershed management plan and then the implementation projects coming out of that. I guess my concern is that, you know, I don't know about their ability to generate other funds to actually fund the watershed management plan. So just building a scenario on that, if in fact they failed, say, within a reasonable time period, a couple years, then all this $100,000 that's scheduled or slated for implementation projects would, I guess, return back to the state board. And I think that, you know, in terms of the local environment, seeing something positive happen as a result of that, I think it would be a failure.
Did they have any estimate for what they thought it would take to produce a plan?
They actually thought it would take $100,000. You know, looking at the details of their plan, I think
then we come back to the problem that we originally addressed, is that right. Spending $100,000 for a plan doesn't in and of itself help anything. It's just a nice document.
It ends up being a full employment policy for an NGO in the region. I'm sorry. That's not what I think that a SEP should be doing.
And I don't think I disagree with you on that. I think, you know, we've indicated to regional board staff here that, you know, cities and counties and agencies develop a lot of plans. The walls are papered with plans, and a lot of that doesn't end up in implementation. I think what we'd like to do is rely on the regional board staff's direction in developing a scope of work for this watershed management plan in particular, that wherein the scope of work focuses on keeping the cost of that plan to a minimum, you know, to the most realistic minimum, and then rather than maybe trying to come up with an actual percentage or dollar figure here tonight, because we're fully supportive of that idea. We want to see the money end up in the watershed, not in paper. Regional board staff seems to be fully supportive of that same idea. So, you know, my two cents is I'd like to, rather than trying to put a number on it tonight, agree that we will hammer out the scope of work and the cost of that plan so that it is the most reasonable plan.
Well, yeah, and well, and when as you're doing that, it would seem to be likely and feasible that the city would donate money, staff time. The city would pair with the NGO to get one, two, or three medium, small-sized, or small grants that would would allow the budget for the plan to sum to some, maybe some double of that amount, and maybe be what they thought was adequate. So it doesn't seem like raising another $30,000 should be, or $30,000 or $40,000 should be that difficult. But then we know for sure that we have $100,000 to go do good work.
Let me throw out something else. Having been through this ringer several times myself, I mean, usually people have good ideas of what the watershed needs, and you go spend $100,000 and you get all kinds of statistics about, you know, percent cover for each reach of the stream and the grain size of sand, you know, for each reach, and all kinds of wonderful statistics that ends up basically showing that what you thought was reasonable in the first place was indeed reasonable. And I would imagine you probably already have a good idea of some of the projects that are needed there. And so why are we doing all this wonderful NGO funding here? Why can't we just have some of those projects to be done? I imagine you could probably rattle off two or three right there.
Yeah, I think, you know, that falls really closely along the lines of the discussions that I've had with the regional board staff, and that there are watershed management plans out there. Certainly some are so comprehensive that even those plans must have identified all kinds of stream bed and watershed implementation projects. As a result of that, we should be able to have a fairly streamlined and relatively low-cost watershed management plan. Again, the first look at a very complex and complete plan suggested about 100,000, but I think we're both, your staff and the city staff, are both dedicated towards seeing that number come down as much as possible. You mentioned a city pairing and trying to come up with additional funds. It's not much, but I might mention that even in our escrow agreement, where we need to deposit money into an account, we have worked out a way that we think we can have that account generate interest, and that interest will go toward funding implementation projects. So, you know, we're looking for ways of making that happen, too.
I mean, actually, what I would propose is we get rid of the plan entirely and do all those. There are a number of implementation, small implementation things on the list already. Let's do those and do number five. You just find some of those things that we already know in the watershed, do the bacteria in the pier, do the short course, and, you know, do some real things.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Jeffries.
If I remember correctly, that you had some city council members here at the original goal round on this, and the first thing out of their mouth was they didn't have any money. So to answer my colleagues, if you expect the city to put up additional money, the answer is they don't have any money. But I must remind them, and that's the reason I didn't vote for option number three, because I felt that option number one was the most appropriate, and that's what we decided some months ago. And with the information was supplied with them, and oh, by the way, we recalculated it wrongly, and we misappropriated the numbers and so forth and go all the way down the line. I really didn't buy that, and I wasn't going to comment too much on it. But I'm somewhat forgiving as our chair is, but then I must remind the city that between option number one is one that we originally was going with is $108,000 less or more than option number three, which we just approved. So I think that maybe they were calculating that they would have to pay the maximum of $351,000, where it's down to $243,000, that there are some additional dollars the city could put up to do the fund. One of the concerns I'm having is that, and being a mayor of a city, understanding that a lot of money goes into plans, and the plans just sit on the shelf. It looks good when your constituents ask you what you're doing. You can say, well, geez, we got a plan here that we've done. But nobody sees any work done. The potholes in the street are still there. The sewage plant still burping and still not processing correctly. And I think that what I'm feeling and hearing from the rest of my colleagues is that they'd rather see the money instead of going to plans, and I understand you have to have some kind of direction to do something, that the money would go to a project that's already been identified in some plan before. Can we not do that? I'm asking the staff.
We don't have an appropriate plan that's identified that sort of project.
In none of their plans that they got sitting on their shelves?
Correct.
Okay. Well, then I'm afraid, as well as some of my colleagues, that all the money will be spent on some consultant's fee on generating a plan, and then there will never get a project that will be completed or done or even started. And so, consequently, we'll have a plan that looks good, but nothing's ever done because the city won't have the money. They'll never implement it. Nothing will ever be completed. So that's my concern, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Chair.
Mr. Shallcross.
Here's the deal: if we let the city pay $29,000, or we let the city have $29,000 of this toward a plan, and they can't come up with any more, then how could we ever expect them to come up with any implementation money after spending $100,000 or $200,000 on a plan? So I think that would be a good indication of where the city is. If they can't come up with the money, they can't come up with it, and the money goes to the state. I mean, it's just that simple.
mean, we have to recognize that they're going to be paying off bonds on a new sewage plant, and that's all their excess money is going to go into that. So money for environmental projects probably will not be there. So,
Mrs. Wally, did you want to address us?
I'm hoping I can provide some helpful information to maybe sort through some of these issues. My name is Stephanie Wald, and I work with Central Coast Salmon Enhancement, and my job is as Watershed Projects Coordinator. And I've worked on, I'm sorry, that's my son. I've worked on watershed management plans in the area previous to this, and I wanted to share with you some of our experiences that we had so you have an understanding of not just what this plan is about, but what this plan can do, even without implementation money attached to it. In Arroyo Grande, a watershed organization was started about 4 years ago with a very small grant. There wasn't a plan in mind at that point. It really was intended to get stakeholders around the table, the farmers, residents, business owners, and anyone else who had a stake for watershed health around one table. And you're all familiar with stakeholder processes. And what this led to eventually in the Arroyo Grande watershed was a plan, is a plan, and it's being produced and will be distributed. It's not a secret document. It's not intended for any regulatory process. It's really intended for the community to use. And it will be an iterative plan where when projects are complete, the section for that plan of the project comes out and another project plan in its place goes in so that we have an iterative plan that moves over time and responds to the community's concerns. That's what we have in mind for this watershed as well. The group has been meeting already for about a year and a half. There has been a lot of landowner involvement, and we have some extremely, I would say, complicated issues in terms of water use and water quality. And so the plan is more than a document. That's the point I really want to make. The plan is a way to get the community involved in helping to make the decisions that are going to affect the community, including the lowest end at the water treatment plant. And if we can reduce water quality issues upstream, we certainly are going to be helping out what's going on downstream. So the plan is more than just a document that sits on the shelf. One of our watershed members is here, Sally Kruger, and she whispered to me and said, you know, why don't you tell them that it's easier in some cases to get implementation funds than it is to get planning money? And that's true. Once you have a plan, it is easier to go forward to other agencies and say, look, we made some decisions on critical issues. We know what the existing conditions are, and we've suggested some projects that can come out of those critical issues. Now will you fund us? Department of Fish and Game requires a plan in order for any projects to move forward. And so with those pieces of information, I hope that you would consider looking at how we might be able to leverage a lower amount for a plan. I'm not suggesting we can't. I think that we possibly can. In fact, we've already been having conversations with the Department of Fish and Game and how they can come in with fish issues and leverage some planning money against what the city is going to provide. So I think there is an opportunity to make that happen. Thank you.
Mr. Daniels.
A question, or I guess a concern I have, is it's really, I guess, this implementation stuff. Because, you know, even if it's more than a plan, even if, you know, you get everyone to agree and everyone is living in great euphoria that, you know, everyone now thinks they understand it and they all agree, still, unless you do something, it doesn't count for much in terms of water quality. And second is, in some sense, we are living in an afterglow right now. That because of the series of bonds that the voters passed in previous elections, and there's been lots of money for implementation. And I'm afraid that by the time you get your plan done, because we're already in phase two, and in some cases phase three of some of those bond measures, a lot of that stuff is just going to be gone. And there's no way that new ones are going to be popping up left and right. So I'm afraid that what you will end up with is a plan in search of implementation money that just doesn't exist for anybody, plan or not. And
point,
you know, certainly, as we say, you're probably not going to find a gravy train down at the city because they'll be paying for a lot of other stuff and important stuff. And so I hope you see the concern that
I do. Point well taken.
Okay.
Any other board questions or comments, suggestions? All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. What form and shape is this motion going to take?
Well, I think Ms. Okun essentially suggested a rewording that I'm happy with, which limited the planning dollar amount to $29,000 and then provided or required $100,000, the remainder, for Part 5, the Watershed Implementation Fund. That's what I would like my motion to consist of.
Okay. Ms. Okun, is that sufficient for a motion? Mr. Shallcross?
Second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. All right. Thank you. We will take a break. And when we return, we will do a public comment.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll continue with our agenda after that. So we will reconvene at 25 after the hour.